Wie findest du das? We're waiting for somebody who does, who fixes this gadget, the IT gadget. So we're waiting for him. I don't know where he is now. Yeah, can you help us, Stephen, fix this? We're just waiting for you. You are the most important person. We will give you 5 minutes so we can finish our eating while he's fixing. Members, we just start our meeting. The IT system has been fixed, so we can go on. Before I welcome you, Hassa, let's tell you that you have been called by Portfolio Committee for Health to come and talk to us. I'm going to talk about that. But maybe you need to know the members that are here, that are in the Portfolio Committee for Health. I know you're going to forget them very quickly, but you'll remember some faces. I've got the whip of the committee, and that is Suleiman. I nearly said he's the only male. I forgot that you can. Okay, next to him, we've got Uma Grace, Honorable Grace Dube. Behind the Honorable Grace Dube, we've got Ume Mafol. Next to Ume Mafol, we've got Ume Sekhwale Tiswai. Agiri Mek, I'm saying Honorable. Is it not so? Agiri Mek, the Honorable. Behind there is Uma Mumfeli. On this other side, we've got two members, Uma Multhuli, Uma Mo Albert Luthuli, sitting just in front of me. She's Albert Luthuli. I don't know whether that creates some problems for other people, but she's Albert Luthuli. Behind Uma Multhuli, we've got Babu Mgoni. Babu Mgoni, I'm very happy they invited you this time. So you're getting invitations. Oh, thank you. Maybe we need to start at them. Oh, how can I? Why are you sitting on the opposition side? So you better come this side. Don't cross the floor. Yeah. Sit next to Babu Mbe. That's Honorable Hussein. I want to sit next to me because he talks a lot. He's going to ask you a lot of questions. This committee room is very funny because we don't look at each other. We're just looking one direction. It's very funny. We should have organized another one for that. So those are the members that you have from the Portfolio Committee. Members, we had asked two groups of people to come to us. One of them is Hassa. I'm told that HASA stands for Hospital Association for South Africa. Of South Africa, okay. The other group that was invited, which unfortunately they did not come for good reasons, is the deans of the faculties of health sciences. We wanted them to come, so we wanted to have these two groups so that they can share this time between now and 12 o'clock. But the deans did not manage to come. The mistake that we did, we had an old address for the chairperson of the deans, and we sent it to that one, only to find that he has been deposed of his position and is somebody else. So they only got it yesterday, so it was too short a notice for them, so they are not here. So we'll have about 3 hours with HASA. We're going to be grilling with HASA for 3 hours. I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or that's a bad thing, but whatever it is, that's what we're going to be doing. So we've invited to HASA, they are here. Maybe you tell us who you are, and then I can welcome you when I know who you are. Oh, by the way, I didn't tell you who am I. I'm Vivian Kolkwane.
Good morning, honorable members of the House. I am Nkaki Matlala. I am chairperson of the Hospital Association of South Africa. First time I came to this House many years ago, many of you were not yet members. It was a painful experience. Last year, when you had your strategic person, I asked to come, and I appreciate the warmth with which you received me, despite one or two people who felt I should not have been there because I was from the private sector. The only reason why that happened was because one was looking for some kind of convergence. As South Africans, how do we put a shoulder to the wheel so that we can resolve our health problems together? With me, I have the members of the Hospital Association. Next to Mam Luthuli there is Advocate Kurt Worrell Clare, who is the CEO of the Hospital Association. And behind me, I have Dr. Victor Bikakanyane, who is a member of the board of HASA. And next to him, I have Melanie Da Costa, who is also a member of the board of HASA. And behind them, I have, next to the wall, Trevor Frankish. Trevor Frankish is a committee member, not a board member, but committee member of HASA. He works closely with the 2010 issues. Next to him, we have Adam Pyle, who is a member of the board. And then next to Adam Pyle, we have Dr. Keith Shongwe, who's deputy chairperson of the Hospital Association, recently elected at our conference two weeks ago. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
He looks like he's a youth. Now I know maybe some of the youth must take them for the mass. Go and learn how to lower their anger. So maybe you need to take him for okay. Yeah, thank you very much. Even your comment, maybe this is what you want. Today is, I'm told, it's the day when Florence Nightingale, it's the day that she died, was the first nurse. We are saying to the nurses, in fact, what I heard was that all the nurses are supposed to go and render 100 minutes of their time today. Whether retired, whether a parliamentarian, but you're supposed to go to the nearest institution, whether it's a clinic, and render service. So we really recognize the nurses and the work that they've done, let alone that we always blame them, but they don't take care of us, but we realize the hard work that they're doing. And I'm not sure if the committee wants to write a letter to the department and congratulate the nurses. I think we must do that. The reason why we called you, I'm sure you know we are in South Africa, and the members that I've been introducing to you are the people that have been voted by South African communities to be in this parliament. I don't have to tell you what parliament does, but one of the things that we told ourselves was to make sure that we better the lives of our people. In health, we want them to be healthy. And we, but we have looked at South Africa, which has got about 49 million people. The interesting thing about that 49 million, the predictions were that because of HIV and AIDS, the population was not going to grow, but it seems to be growing. The last time I was looking at the population statistics, it was about 45 million, but it's 49 million now. I'm not sure what does that say about the HIV and AIDS, but at that 49, we're still very bad as far as infant mortality is concerned. We're still very bad as far as maternal mortality is concerned in South Africa. And we're still burdened by HIV and AIDS and ETB. If we compare ourselves with the other countries, we find that the infectious conditions are far less than the degenerative conditions. But in South Africa, it's the other way around. Now, we thought it was important that we call people like ourselves, knowing very well that we've got, included to what I've just said, there's a very big gap between the poor and the rich in South Africa. And it seems as if your constituency is mostly those that can afford. In fact, it was interesting. I'm not sure whether people noticed. There is this family where somebody went in, and I think it's a miss something. I've forgotten the surname. But he went in there, and he damaged, they injured the baby, and the lady was looking after the baby. The baby was admitted in a private hospital. The lady who looks after the baby was admitted in another hospital. I don't know what that says to us. I'm sure you remember the story. It's something that I'm told those people have been caught. But the interesting thing is that both of them were injured by this person, but the other one was taken somewhere else. The other one was taken somewhere else. That shows the inequities that we have. We are calling you. We know you're in business. When you're in business, you're looking after your profit. But we're not here to ask you not to make your profit. But we want to see and understand. I don't know how you've prepared your presentation as to how can we together make sure that this infant mortality, this maternal mortality goes down. We're not trying to be prescriptive. We're not trying to be arrogant. We are just saying, let's work together and see how we can move forward and make sure that we make South Africa a better South Africa for everybody. And unfortunately, I don't want us to go to the national insurance discussion as yet. But we just want to hear how can we probably move together so that everybody, even if I'm sitting at Qingqo, where I come from, in deep rural areas in Kankan, but I would know that I wouldn't be afraid that if I get sick, I might die because of not having a health care. We know that we're looking at, this is not part of blaming the private healthcare sector, but I'm just mentioning one of my observations. This is not research. I've noticed that with the private healthcare sector, that is a hospital industry, there's very little primary healthcare that happens. Do you have any sort of ways? I know probably primary healthcare doesn't bring a lot of money, but do you have some innovative ways of how you could actually come and help in that situation? We know our country is very vast, and part of the problem is because of the distances that we've got to travel. If you look at places like the Northern Cape, some people have got to travel close to 1,000 kilometers to get to a hospital. In the Eastern Cape, it's exactly the same, if not worse. So we're just trying to find out from you. We're not here to fight, but we're here to make sure that we work together and make sure that all our people are getting the health services that they deserve. This is why I've called you. And I don't know how you've prepared your presentation, but give us your presentation and the members will ask you a few questions when you have done your presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. honorable members of the House, thank you very much for inviting us. I too have, it's been a long time since I've been in this House, and it's nice to be back in a different dispensation. I just really want to take this opportunity to introduce Harter to you, and I think having this opportunity for the first time in a long time, really just to say who we are and what our ethos is, and we've got a presentation. We're going to go through those slides, but please feel free to ask us any question at any time. We don't want to structure it per se. If you want to ask us questions, we're free to do that too. Everyone in the House that has accompanied Harter today are experts within their field, so they'll be able to assist on a wide variety of issues. Firstly, the Hospital Association is a non-profit organization. We represent approximately 90% of all private hospitals and ambulatory clinics throughout the country. That constitutes all three of the hospital groups, being Netcare, MediClinic, Life Healthcare, as well as a significant number of independent hospitals. These are standalone facilities, which are very often doctor-owned. We recognize and submit to the leadership and stewardship of the Department of Health, and we're very encouraged at the synergies and relationships that have been built there over the last couple of months in particular. As a body, we communicate and consult with numerous members of Parliament, both at national and provincial level, as well as international developments, on a wide variety of issues, many of which impact on South African healthcare interests across the country. We have a significant code of ethics, which we govern ourselves by. It's an evolving document. Some time ago, we submitted it to the Department of Health for their input, and it's something which we work on a regular basis, as and when issues come up. We'd like to see ourselves as a responsible resource that will continue to contribute to the betterment of healthcare within the Republic. And we're very encouraged by your opening remarks, Chair, because we too are not here to fight. We're really here to try and find synergies and common ground and really how we can assist. We prepared in our slide really a response to a couple of things. We're aware of the fact that you don't want to talk about NHI now. We won't either. But we're really just saying that we're also open to discussions in that regard and how we can help as well. But basically what we're really wanting to do is bridge the divide between the public and private sectors and how we can operate successfully between the private and public sectors going forward on a wide variety of issues, one of which is 2010 readiness. So we're going to talk to just a few of those issues and some of the things which have come up over the last couple of months, particularly as raised in the press as well. I'm going to hand over to Dr. Lakshmanyane, who will take over from here. But as I said, you know, please feel free to interrupt us and ask questions, and we'll respond from when the questions come. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, members of the committee. First of all, I'm going to start with very maybe well-known facts about South Africa, which maybe just back to a starting point. I'm going to address the issue about how we operate in the private sector, as well as the pricing issues in the sector, so that I can focus. First of all, I'm sure all of us know our population numbers, and that approximately just more than 8 million people are medically short in South Africa. This number has likely increased over the last few years, but yes, it's still a very small number if you look into the total the population in the country. If you look at private sector utilization usage, in the primary care, it's about 15 million. In fact, the general household survey that was done indicated that 50% of South Africans actually use the private sector for their health care. Now, this is mainly with GPs, and it's not, they usually use that for primary health care, and if they need hospitalization, they tend to go to the public sector. Now, that number differs from the number that comes from the Catholic medical schemes, that's about, which puts at 30%, which is that 15 million, as you see on the slide. So basically, that the number of people who actually use the private sector at the primary care level, and we understand that this is obviously an out-of-pocket expenditure that may put families into financial difficulties. but that's the reality in South Africa. The other issue is that when you look at utilization in hospitals, in a hospital, the number is actually higher than the people insured, because the number of people who actually came out of pocket for the health care as well, that's higher than the 8 million people that are insured. The chair said a few things in his opening remarks about who we are. I mean, yes, we are a hospital association, and therefore focus on hospitals. However, as the chair may know, some of the groups have primary care services that we're not addressing to now. Obviously, talking to them about hospital issues, and also emergency services that we provide. We're also not talking about the very good work we do, and I want to address this issue now with the commission chair that. You know, whenever there are, reports about, for example, the good case you talked about, which is a very, very important case, the good stuff that is done by the private sector is not actually focused or looked at. We publish on a regular basis the good things we do in our sector. For example, as Netcare alone, we spend 13 million rand a year looking after indigent patients, but that's not looked at. And we do a lot of number of, between the various hospitals and the groups, a number of CSI projects that are dedicated and focusing on the poor in this country. And we try and make those things public, but they're not very good news. I guess South Africa doesn't like good news. And that they never actually get reported on the front pages, and they're never actually shared with our stakeholders. But maybe it's also our fault that we don't push those issues hard. Obviously, we also provide a lot of employment. We employ a lot of people. We contribute to our tax. We do good things for the country as well. Yes, we understand that there's a big divide between have and have nots, and we also want to do something about it, and that's why we're here. We're trying to find a solution for our own people that cannot afford private health care, because this is we're also affected in a sense, because these are our own people. For example, Chair, we had a health sector charter draft that was being developed between us and the department, in which we had proposed a public sector enhancement fund, a fund that we put together and assist the public sector to provide better care for indigent patients. That charter never went anywhere. So we actually were making strides to say, look, let's work together to try and help more people. So it's something that maybe you could assist us to see whether we could not work with the department to get out of the field. So I'm sorry about that diversion, but I thought it was important to do that. The reality is that currently in the private sector, in terms of the Medical Schemes Act, we have what's called prescribing minimum benefits. These are the minimum benefits that each scheme must include in their benefit design. And the PMBs represent about 30% of private hospitalization. In other words, there are things that are not covered by PMBs. If it's a PMB, obviously, that has to be provided. The medical scheme has to pay for that services. However, there are things that are excluded from PMBs that medical aids can then say that, this person is not covered for that, or the funds have run out for that, and therefore, we're not prepared to pay. And in fact, medical aids can go ahead to actually instruct us that the patient must be moved to the public sector because the funds are exhausted. What medical schemes have done, they have arrangements to actually use state or public sector hospitals as a DSP, as a designated service provider. In other words, they're saying that for those things, we must actually go to state. And when we're saying this, I use your title because we don't actually believe that these were proper arrangements or proper contracts with the provinces. But it's a practice. For example, if you look at the Transnet issue, that in that case, when for certain things, people have to go to the public sector for services. In terms of emergencies, we are compelled to treat emergencies. In fact, we treat emergencies on a daily basis. They were compelled by the National Health Act as well as the Constitution of the country to look after emergency cases. These patients are kept at our hospitals until we can find a bed for them. They get stabilized, they're kept in the hospital at the cost, obviously, to the groups, and that cost is actually written off as part of our contribution as a country. Many times, many hospitals in the public sector are on divert. Divert means that they are saying they are full. Many hospitals are actually running at full capacity. Then they tell us that, no, you cannot bring a patient in. Then we have to keep the patient as long as there's no bed in the public sector. Only when there's a bed available, so we don't actually dump and go there and drop a patient and run away. It's an arranged transfer. We call, we make arrangements, we talk to the register on call, they discuss with the consultant, and then say there's a bed available, please come. It's not like we're leaving patients and looked after on the street. It's actually an arranged transfer. If there's no bed, the patient stays with us. So if you look at our recommendations, basically, there are currently no terms diverting patients both ways. We've been trying to engage provinces about this issue to say, look, we also want to help. If the public sector has a full ICU, then they need another patient. There must be a process that they can actually divert that patient to us as well. But we have not been able to get to a point where we can agree that this is how we work together as one sector. We are part of the national health system, and we don't want patients to be denied health care because of an ability to their bed. So we really appeal to you to help us to work with the Department of Health to actually have an agreement about how we work together so that patients are not left unattended. And then we can talk about how we can work together in that sense. And therefore, we recommend that the protocol be developed for managing patients between the two sectors. So, I mean, the issue that since HASA members do not discern patients between PMBs and non-PMBs, we support the customer visa scheme's view that PMBs should be expanded to include all hospitalization. Because if that happens, then it means that there's no way you will actually be requested to transfer a patient out of a private bed into a public bed, because they will actually stay there until they are fully looked after and they can then be discharged. And then that will remove the issue that patients then have to be moved to state hospitals. So, Chair, those are our main recommendations that we hope we can maybe discuss later on and take it forward.
I think it would be helpful if the presenter, when he's reading to us, he actually, like, we support the CNS, perhaps to say it for what it is, so that we understand. Because often we're battling with what is CNS, what is the abbreviation. Because he can say it in full, and then we get to know what he's talking about. Just making an appeal.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
If you will, rather than saying ANC, you say African National Congress.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'll do that. PMS stands for the Council for Medical Schemes. The next topic is about private sector pricing. Let me upfront indicate that we are not allowed by law as the different hospital groups to discuss pricing. It's actually seems to be anti-competitive. In fact, we could all go to jail for that. And therefore, we don't have collective bargaining. We don't actually go to Minister and say, you shall pay us so much. Pricing in the private sector is negotiated between the private hospitals with the schemes and with the administrator. So that's how it happens. And therefore, medical will do its own negotiations, so will Life, so will Netcare, so will clinics, so will any of our members. Now, there are different forms of pricing in the private sector. We have what we call fee-for-service, that FSS stands for fee-for-service, which basically is an itemized billing where we actually bill for every service that was provided to the patient. And then we have the per diems and the fixed fees, which are much more global fees that actually are not itemized. Actually, it's a fee for, which is a number of things put together. But you should remember that these are fees for hospital care. This excludes the fees that are charged by the doctors. The doctors also then charge the professional fee as well. So, and that's an important distinction. And the doctors also negotiate with their schemes for their own pricing as well, for their own tariffs. So that's also after that.
So a per diem is a package fee per day, so you're guaranteed that the fee will not be more than that price. So you can either structure it the itemized billing, or this is the fee per day, a little bit like when you go to a hotel, but everything is packaged in, you know. And then a fixed fee would be for the whole procedure. So if you stay there for 3 days or 4 days or 5 days, this is the fee, and it won't exceed that amount. So it's a package of fees. It's called alternative reimbursement.
Maybe to add to that, I mean, many of the groups and all our members have been moving more towards the alternative investment models, moving away from fee-for-service to try and deal with those issues that we talked about. So, so there are different systems of pricing. The next slide, it's basically to show how much, in the private sector in South Africa, 32% of the total expenditure is actually on hospitals. And just to compare with other countries, and we're not saying this are necessarily comparable. We're just saying that this is how it looks like, so that we can look at other geographies. The next slide is about on a parity basis, the per capita health expenditure in the private sector in South Africa for medical screen patients. You can actually see it's in US dollars, much less than many other countries. Also, just to actually share that information about what we said. We always talk about how we compare globally, are we expensive, and things like those. So we're just giving that information. The next slide, which I think is very, very important, is that in South Africa, we have significantly lower out-of-pocket payments than peer countries. By this, we mean that in many countries, even if you have an insurance or a social health insurance, people still have to pay out of pocket. And if you look at South Africa in this case here, and this is total expenditure, private and public, you will see how much money is spent by the blue color there is the general government expenditure, and then the private sector is a lighter yellow color. I'm not good with colors. And the darker yellow color there is the out of pocket. You see that if you compare with many countries that are relatively, of our, similar status, we compare actually not that badly. Interesting enough is that even countries like in Colombia, where they have a very huge social security expenditure, they still have out-of-pocket. So even that has not, taken out-of-pocket expenditure. So I'm just trying to share that, there is definitely a component of out-of-pocket expenditure. It's, however, not as big as in some of the countries that we usually compare ourselves against. So in conclusion, Chair, we just want to say that Section 90 of the National Health Act talks about a reference price list. However, in the current law, that price list is not mandatory to ensure that there's competition within the sector. In other words, it's a reference price so that we can still compete and negotiate with the scheme so that we can get competition to actually lower prices as well. We as HASA and our members have worked very hard with our consultants to do a cost analysis of our system to actually determine what is actually the right reference price list based on our cost structure. And that information is currently available. It's actually with the department as well, and we are hoping that information will be utilized to determine that reference price list. We believe that will also help us to ensure that there is comfort that our costs are real, they're not imagined, they're real costs that have been properly calculated. We also want to ask the department to consider also doing a similar exercise for costing public sector expenses. I mean, procedures. For example, when you compare, whatever procedure, whether it's a knee replacement, private and public, we don't actually have a benchmark exercise to say how much it actually costs the state. And I worked in government as chairperson for 10 years. The issue is that there's no proper costing that determines how much it costs. Therefore, we're not quite sure whether it's more expensive or less expensive in the private sector, unless we have a proper costing exercise done in the public sector. So those are the few issues that we want to conclude on the price that we currently have a reference price list. We have done our work on our side. We're waiting for government to come back to us on that issue, and we hope to work together going forward. Thank you very much.
Can I just to emphasize this point that my colleague has mentioned, earlier on he said that there are many good things that we do. Some of us have gone through to a few of our tertiary and quaternary public hospitals to say to them that we know that you have backlogs in doing certain procedures, and we would want to assist with those backlogs in one way or the other. Now, the difficulty they had, two of the most senior hospital managers in two of the biggest hospitals in this country, were saying that the difficulty they have is that they don't know how much it costs them to do a bypass in their hospital. So if we were to go beyond a CSI, which is a social investment issue, and they must buy services from us, they wouldn't know how much they would pay. They probably do have the budget to can do so, but they don't know how much it costs. So it is very important that honorable members look at this thing that my colleague is talking about.
about the reference price list, because it also will assist government in government knowing how much it spends in a particular hospital based on the inputs that they have in that hospital in terms of instruments that they have to buy, the amount of medicines that they have to buy, the throughput in terms of patients who get operated or treated in that hospital. How much does it cost to do an appendicectomy, for example? Until we know those things in the public sector, healthcare management is still going to be difficult. So it is we want to really urge this house to continue these discussions such that we can arrive at some benchmark of sorts. Thank you.
Is it complete? Is that all? Or you wanted to?
Just to talk about solutions, because we believe that we need to find solutions. I mean, it doesn't help us putting out things. There are a number of solutions that we propose, as Dr. Matala said. He's a surgeon, he has to talk about appendectomy, you know, but it's fine. that we have actually been proposing solutions to the various provinces, to national health, to say, can we work together, can we find solutions? So we're not sitting back and just, saying that we're happy with the kind. We're not happy with the kind situation, that is all. And, I mean, we tend to look at things. I mean, for example, one of the issues that are affecting medical schemes is the medical aid population, which is aging. Young people are actually not taking up medical cover, and therefore you find this adverse selection. So you find an aging population that has higher utilization, and therefore it tends to utilize hospitals much, much more. Whereas the medical scheme was supposed to have a risk pooling, that has actually been eroded. And therefore, we believe that solution is to strengthen social solidarity and affordability as a consequence by having a risk cost subsidies. And that's why the risk causation fund was mooted by the cancer prevention schemes, to ensure that between the schemes, they share the risk and we have actually bigger risk pool than small pools. Because some medical schemes have old and sick people, others have young and healthy people. So we need to look at how we can work on that. We think that will also help a lot to bring down costs. We also have to look at issues that actually affect, on the other side, which is income cost subsidies. For example, restructuring tax exemption subsidies. Look at monetary membership for those who can afford. I mean, there are a number of people who can afford medical aid, but they're not to actually take it up. It's that choice, obviously, because it's not monetary. If it's monetary, you actually have a bigger pool of people contributing, and therefore the cost will definitely come down. We're saying that the other things that can be looked at, for example, look at the VAT issue. Currently, there's VAT on health services. Is that the right thing to do for the country? It's a policy issue share that maybe is not necessarily our call, but we're just putting things on the table. For example, we need to review whether the HPCSA, the Health Professionals Council of South Africa, regulations are not also increasing costs. Some groups have mooted the issue that if we employ doctors, we could then offer much more affordable health care. Kind of doctors work for themselves, and therefore they are not necessarily, interests are not necessarily aligned. So employment may actually bring down the cost of health care. The other one is about purchasing of drugs and surgicals. Currently, government buys on state tender at a very cheap price. We buy separately and we pay, a premium on drugs. And if maybe the country bought through one as one, we'll actually get good prices that could actually, reduce cost of healthcare. These are just but a few. There are a number of solutions that we proposed before, Chair, and we prepare to engage on a solution approach rather than on a look at programs. That's my last slide. And we'll then move on to the next topic, Dr. Matlas.
Thank you, Chair. The next discussion that the House wanted to understand from us is our 2010 World Soccer Cup readiness. I need to say that as a private sector hospital, we have been invited to some meetings earlier on between the Department of Health, ourselves, and the Health Committee of the local organizing committee, Health Committee. However, for the last, it's almost now 10 months, it has been difficult for us as the private sector to participate because most of those scheduled meetings have been cancelled for a variety of reasons. But we ourselves have been readying ourselves because we understand that what the need is going to be. So we have continued to implement internal readiness plans, and in this regard, meetings have been held with both national and provincial departments of health on an ad hoc basis, where we talk to concerned people around this. I will later on explain how, up to now, we really don't have any agreement with the Department of Health as to how we are going to relate. I'll explain what that means. Now, for us, this is the biggest event in the world for 32 days, which is going to be in winter and coming just after economic recession. And we have to provide emergency care as the law of our country dictates. We cannot refuse any patient who comes to our doors if they have an emergency or there is an acute hospital admission that is needed. So we will support that. And we believe that there's going to be an increase in need during the World Cup. We also appreciate that this gives us an opportunity to develop and forge new relationships between the public and the private sector, which is very necessary, not only as a legacy, but for us to achieve the objectives that we are talking about in this meeting or in this come together. Now, in terms of the major incident preparedness, most private hospitals have trained their staff so that with the increased need, they will be able to offer the service that we anticipate is going to be needed. Some hospitals, or most of the hospitals, have major incident committees that have been established and are functional in all the designated hospitals. Major incident plans are really generic to whatever group. At Mediclinic, they might have a way of dealing with that. At Netcare or at Life Health Care, they will have that. So they are customized according to the hospital group or to the particular hospital. Also, in terms of operational plans, the actual roles, committed responsibilities on those game days that are going to be around the particular hospital have been detailed. And also, there are some hospitals that are designated and are around the stadia that are used for training. So in between matches, those hospitals are also ready to receive any eventuality that might treat any eventuality that might occur. In addition, private hospitals need to ensure that the ordinary operations must continue. Early in our meetings, there was an agreement between the department and the private health sector on what targets to look for. For example, we need to be in the private sector ready with our emergency centers so that in case there is a need, we can receive patients. Our triage system has to be up to scratch so that we are able to know which patient must be treated first. We also need to be ready for forensic. You have heard a lot of talk in the media about human trafficking and other things, so we must be ready with that. We must also be ready of importance. Most of the World Cup games that have taken place, those countries have remained with a rich information around health issues that go on during that period. So it is important that we get a database that we can always use as reference to advise others and ourselves going forward. Our hospitals need to be ready, and especially in terms of disaster medicine, it is a huge area of focus for readiness. In terms of gathering clinical information, I mentioned how triage is a priority. It is important such that you are able to determine the acuity of a patient. We need to know outcome of patients who are treated at our center, clinical surveillance. I must say that for the last probably 8 months, we are receiving, or there is a lot of interaction between the private sector and the Department of Health, especially the Department or the Division of Epidemiology, where because of the World Cup, they had to set up systems such that they can be able to surveil especially communicable diseases, not only from patients or people who come into the country, but also for the community. The difficulty when they started talking to us was that there was no communication between the private sector and the public sector in terms of communicable diseases. And I must say that processes are in place at this stage such that we improve that communication, so that whether a patient reports to the public sector or to the private sector, at the National Command Center, which is at SAMS in Pretoria, all this data can flow in so that we have one set of information about communicable diseases in the country, instead of having a country that is demographically divided in terms of disease. And also, many of the private hospitals do have information or keep information about the delivery of clinical care. Some hospitals do have a lot of information on internet, especially around what to do if there is a major incident, what protocols exist in case of infectious diseases, special situations, reference information in terms of clinical conditions and operational standards and formats. Unfortunately for us, up to now, we don't quite have a clear communications plan from the Department of Health, especially in terms of delivering of the service. What we have is a setup of, we have nurses that are earmarked to be put in the designated private hospitals. Those nurses will be paid for by WHO. WHO has put up a fund to pay those nurses. Those nurses are there for gathering of data that can then be reported to the command center. So surveillance has been strengthened, but service provision itself, there's not much communication between the Department of Health and the public and the private sector. We need a list of reporting requirements. However, if it comes to the surveillance, I think because there is such activity in that area, before long we will have finalized the reporting requirements. Reporting structures for incidents and admissions, those are still areas where we need to improve. We also need to finalize list of supporting hospitals and services. I'm saying this because the list of designated hospitals that we have received, there are some hospitals that are next to stadia that are not included in the designated hospitals, because the designation of hospitals was initially done before people knew where matches are going to be played. So it is no logic to have a hospital that is next to a stadium having been excluded from an earmarked hospital. Agreement in place and terms thereof for cooperation between healthcare sectors. This is something that just last week we talked to the acting DG, who's also about to get out as acting DG, about this problem that up to about February there has been a discussion between the private sector and the public sector in terms of what do we do with indigent patients who come out of because of 2010, who might have injuries, who come out of the stadia and need medical help. At that time, there was a proposal that in terms of tariffs, and it came from the department, we must accept the commissioner of on injury on duty rates, and we have accepted that. But up to now, we don't have any agreement. So I talked to him last week. They had a meeting. I hope that today or tomorrow we will have that kind of agreement as they promised yesterday. Legacy target in terms of outcomes, I think this can only develop once there is continuing come together between the private sector and the public sector in terms of what do we expect as outcomes. For example, the databases, how are we going to use the databases for the future of our country in terms of, you know, disease demographics. In conclusion, Honorable House, HASA wants to reassure you of our willingness to join hands and work with yourselves towards the attainment of better health for all in our country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Thanks, Victor. Thanks, Dr. Matlana. That is the presentation, member. Let me introduce two members that came after when you have already started so that you know them. I can't see them now. Where are they? Oh, the Uma Mukanya behind Ngate Hussein. That's Honorable Kenya. Where's the other one? I saw her coming in. Oh, you're hiding. Memoir? She's not the CEO of Para. She's another More. The More we'll see always is more darker than her. She's lighter. That's the presentation. As I said, we called to HASA just to understand what is going on. And there are a few questions that I asked in my opening remarks, which they've tried to answer. But there are some questions that the members are going to be asking. I'm interested myself in knowing, where do you see yourselves in 20 years? I know you've covered it in the legacy, the legacy. But it would be very interesting. The reason why I'm asking this question, I tend to think that probably some of the problems that we have in South Africa, the unhealthy situation in South Africa, is related to these inequities that we have. Let me make an example. I might be having a medical aid because I'm working for a particular mine in Oden-Alfred. And because I've got that medical aid, I'm diagnosed to be HIV positive. I go to a private institution. But for some reason, I get retrenched, and I go back to Transkei while I was on a particular regime of treatment. When I go back to Transkei, my medical aid lapses, I don't have money to go to the doctor, and I don't get the treatment. Now, what is going to happen is that I'm going to develop resistance to the treatment that I had, even if it's restarted. You understand what I'm trying to say? So the next thing, I developed MDR and FDR. Because of that fact, which is caused by the fact that at some stage I had money, I could afford, and because of lack of information, I get into another place and things become worse. This is where I'm asking, where do we see ourselves in 20 years from now, in trying to make sure that we cater? That does not say that we should not continue with our work looking at profit, but to see how we can make sure that this information is going to permeate and make sure that these things develop. I'm very happy with this relationship that Ntate Mashala has mentioned, that there doesn't seem to be any relationship. And it's interesting that when we've just taken a talk of the 2010 readiness, let me not say 2010, let me say 2010 FIFA World Cup readiness. So as we were going around, in some areas they were saying, no, we're working very well with the private healthcare industry, specifically meaning the hospitals. I think this is what they said in this case. This is what they said in Gauteng. But it's interesting that there doesn't seem to be anything that you are bringing forth to say, this is where we are with them. Maybe something that we need to take up very quickly, because we're only left with 28 days now to that. And government has got a policy of public-private partnership. I don't know why we are not going that direction. I've mentioned, Victor, this primary health care. I know you talked about GPs, But I still think maybe we don't know much what's happening in the private healthcare industry. I mean, private hospital industry. We don't know much, but I tend to think that there's very little primary care. I know some of the initiatives that have been done, but I still think that there's a lot that probably we can do in that area. Emergency services, we know of people who have been turned away in certain hospitals. We're not going to go to hospitals just because somebody didn't have a medical aid. They get taken out and say, look, go to another hospital. We're not going to treat you. And some of those patients have died on the way. Maybe the intention is good, but what's happening on the ground might not be exactly what you think needs to be happening. The pricing, which I think, I mean, they have lowered my I don't know what to say, but I had another impression, but now I understand when you say there's nothing that you can benchmark in South Africa, where we say in the public health sector, this is how much it costs to do that sort of thing. But we still have to look. I remember minister has been quoting something of a patient that paid $500,000 for an appendectomy in South Africa, in a private hospital. He did mention it's a private hospital. I'm sure you heard about that. Yet, which I think it's giving an impression that you just charge anything that you think is going to be relevant for that person. But that patient was coming from Swaziland, and it's something that we need to look into. We know here, when we're talking about this 2010, we're talking about three big hospital groups. It's your Medicare, Life, and your Mediclinic. Is it Mediclinic? Yeah. So we're talking about those. But you are not uniformly, allocated in South Africa. You might find that in the Eastern Cape it's more life than the other. But what I'm interested in is it not because why we don't seem to have something between government and that? You find that in the Eastern Cape they're working with life at that local level. Is it not that? Because if it's not that situation, we need to take it up as from today and make sure that this thing is sorted out before we get to the 2010, so that we don't get embarrassed. Those were the comments that I wanted. But I'm very interested in this one as to where do we see ourselves in 20 years to come? Especially that I think that somehow the way that we're handling health in South Africa, we are contributing to the burden of diseases that we have, as I've mentioned. And the other example is this one of, we get injured, the two of us, the other one goes to another hospital, the other one goes to another hospital. Not because they like, but because the other one cannot afford it, the other one can afford this particular area. Remember, that is that. Okay, Medify, Madule, Whip, okay, that was it. For those who came late, we are having the Hospital Association of South Africa. That is the association that is an umbrella body. It's an association for the private hospital industry in South Africa. So they've just given us a presentation. I'm sure you have the documents in front. Did you give them the documents? Okay. Okay, Madison.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think this type of a meeting was really very important and fruitful. But I would suggest that, like we always say, that when the people are coming to present, the presentation must come to us maybe a day before, so that we can go through it and really establish certain facts, so that we shouldn't be coming here maybe not like prepared. And another thing which I want to say is, I think it is very important that in future that in the same meeting we must have together with the Department of Health. so that we should be talking, because with us, we don't represent only one. Because the clients going to them are the people whom we are representing. So that certain things which have been said must be explained in that meeting. It is an association, I understood, and it says it's a voluntary, meaning that it's not compulsory. And that is why maybe the 90%, because when they started, they told us the 90%, then I got worried about the 10%, but I understand. I would like to really know the representative of HASA per province. I think for us to be knowing an organization or a body, we should be knowing where are these people. Not to say that you find them only concentrated in Gauteng or Western Cape, where in rural places, where are they? I think I will want to know that. And I think you are right, Chairperson, to be saying that with private hospital, mostly they are not visible at the primary health care. But I have seen that they have numbers of primary health care patients. Then I would like to know, when we talk about primary health care, is it comprehensive or is it certain people? Or like initially we knew that in private hospital you can go for family planning or for whatever, but we would like to know, I would like to know, is it a comprehensive primary health care? And another thing still on the primary health care, because now we do have this problem of, like, I will pick up TB, where the cure rate is a problem. And it, among other things, is what we have said with the HIV, whereby I'm on TB treatment, and I've been affording to go to the private doctor. Then when my medication is my medical aid is exhausted, I'm now referred back to the primary health care, which is the Department of Health. How do they work? Because there are protocols in the government. Do they follow the protocols within the government? Because what we have seen is the resistance is being made by, I will go to the private doctor and give me this medication. When I go to the clinic, I get another medication. And another thing, like you are saying, the presentation is good and promising, but what's really happening in the at grassroots is not what we are hearing. Because now I'm understanding that the private hospital stabilize the patient, but most often it's not what is happening. You find that the patient will be at the casualty or whatever, at the entrance, and she's not treated because she doesn't have medical aid. I've got a lot of them because it is really an interesting thing, and I think it is really something which we should really be dealing with it very much. I will just try to be short, to really, because the other thing which really made me surprised is when the doctor was saying that the government hospital don't know the prices of operations, because those people, when I go there in Job Chimangani Hospital, I'm going to be charged according to what is been done, even if the government is subsidizing a certain percentage. That is why I say I really want to see the price, this body together with Department of Health. Then the issue of 2010, I would like to know which hospital are designated. so that as a public representative, I can go there because we are really want to see the 2010 in health in particular be ready. The last one is, I think I'm having a serious problem of the communication between the private, the health and the Department of Health. And that is why I will re-emphasize, because it's not a matter of choice, you have said it, because it is a policy that we must have private-public partnership. And it's, we cannot be saying if this patient at a certain stage can be in a public hospital and in a certain stage he can be in a private hospital and having two bodies which are not working together. Thank you, check person for now.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think there are other heads that are going to come. No, not that one is trying to protect the members. I think there are certain things probably that I need to clarify. When we call them, we usually have to give them the agenda as to what is going to be discussed. But because we felt that this was the first of its kind, I'm not sure whether we have ever been called to Parliament, but it was the first time that we decided we need to call them. We did not craft any particular agenda, more than the fact that we wanted to understand. And there's a lot of revelations that have come, specifically this one of poor communication between the department and them, which I think is very crucial, that because all of us are looking at health. We want to improve the health industries in South Africa. But what we cannot afford not to talk to each other. So probably that's why the document came late. It's because they were not sure even themselves what is going to be asked. The other area, you know, when you're talking about primary health care, I think probably let's give them the benefit of doubt that we're talking about the hospital industry. Now, there are people who handle primary health, which is the doctors. Unfortunately, the doctors are not accountable to the hospital. You'll correct me if I'm wrong. The doctor works on his own, but he uses the hospital. Now, you cannot ask him to put a protocol for primary health care for your industry, but it's something that you need to agree on yourself. On this one of having, I'm not answering for you. I'm just chairing the meeting, but I'm just highlighting certain things. On this one of health, I think the private healthcare hospital industry is... it's a profit-making business, if I'm right. You'll correct me if I'm wrong. Now, if you put up, they work on research and everything. If you put up a private hospital in Greenlaw, where I come from, obviously you won't have clients. Because where I come from, I'm the only one who's got a medical aid. I'm the only one who's got, so obviously you'll never survive there. So you've got to, I'm trying to say, that's why I probably see them in Cape Town. But why we've called them, you are right, Marissa, why we've called them, we want to see, because if we are going to try and make people of Cape Town and Johannesburg healthy, you are going to be infected by those who are not healthy outside your circle. So this is why Maurice is asking this question, that you are going to look after these ones who can afford. But what about those who can't afford, who are going to come and infect those who can afford with their disease? Obviously, it's going to create a problem for us. I can't remember what this, I think it's the whip and then, you notice the members, some of them have got good class. That one was asking questions, the nurse, by the way. So she's rejoicing because it's a Nurses Day, it's an International Nurses Day. You can see she's got a flower there. Even the other nurse who's sitting next to you, Victor, you can see the way she has made her hair. She's really recognizing the International Nurses Day today. Okay, Matthew.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm a little bit worried. The reason why I'm worried is because if you are a patient, you always are in hospital and you see what is happening. this portion whereby the association says that they cannot control the prices, I want to check, why is this body established? What is its role? Because if you are a body, I think there are things that you can establish that are complaints from the client. So if they cannot control the pricing, to me it shows that it is really business, not a concern of patients. Number two is that after I am in the private hospital, the money gets exhausted, but I'm still sick. Why transfer me to a general hospital? Because I am your client. And I also want to check, there are other medical aids that says they expire per year. How do I know how much do I have in my medical aid, and what are the costs going to be for that time when I'm admitted in hospital? And if I'm still their client, why can't they say, because this one is exhausted, but as and when you still a member, you are still a member, you'll be able to pay for what you owe. And I've also noticed that the medical aid, a hospital, private hospital, don't want to work at a loss. I remember that when people have insurances, whether you die today, you started 3 months ago, as long as you are waiting period, your winter period has lapsed, you get all the money that you are entitled to. Why now the medical aid is saying when you are exhausted, they, you know, to me they are chasing you away to a general hospital. I mean the private hospital, general hospital. Lastly, is that what was the question I wanted to ask? Oh, I'll come on the second round.
Thanks. I think you should answer those questions. The next hand was we're just been joined by one of our members, Honorable Mike Waters.
Sorry, I'm late.
Oh, no problem. No, somebody told us that you were going to be late.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you for the presentation. You mentioned that you represent 90% of the private and ambulatory clinics. Who are the other 10%? I would like to know. And then I would like to move to the issue that there's about 20%, less than 20% of the population are medical insured. That means 80%, more than 80% are not insured. Now, we are busy with the NHI, developing that now. And I do believe that by early next year we'll be hopefully finished with that. Now, I would like to know from you, from the private sector, what role are you playing, if any, in developing this NHI? So you mentioned it here, but because there's no, they haven't got any certainty yet how it will be, that you can actually elaborate on that. But are you playing any role from the private sector in developing this medical insurance?
There were still other hands. Okay, Daniel.
Chair, thank you very much. I must say up front, because of the nature of the question that I'm going to ask, is that I understand and accept that the private hospitals are driven by profit. And if that not be the case, then we wouldn't have those hospitals. And that we must accept and respect the fact that they are making a significant contribution towards the healthcare of patients in South Africa. So upfront, I must say that. But at the same token, I want to pick up on the point that you've made earlier, where in reality, if you don't have money when you go to these private hospitals, you will be turned away. And I see that the hospital association has an agreed upon code of ethics. The question I want to ask is that on a daily basis, people are being turned away. I would gather that within that code of ethics covers the issue of patients being turned away because they don't have, and that's just a guess, unless I'm wrong. Do you take any action against these hospitals? I'm trying to understand what kind of muscle do you really have. And if you have, what has been the history of this? If you can just paint a picture in terms of 25% of the hospitals, for example, have been given a fine or whatever the case might be. We know in reality these things are happening. I mean, you can put a cell phone on now and speakerphone and phone one of these private hospitals and they'll tell you, if you don't have 6,000 rand deposit to 10,000, go there to Aga Khan Hospital in Jaffa. That's the reality that's going on. It's gone 9,000. The price goes up every time I speak. Chair, the second thing is that I was interested in the one slide where there was some suggestions in terms of reducing the cost of healthcare. And I think that we all accepted that there's two components when it comes to quality healthcare. The one is, of course, the cost, and the other is the issue of accessibility. Now, the question I want to ask is that how is it that I know that there is a large number of and millions of South Africans who are employed, who can afford private health care, but not necessarily have to be able to pay a 9,000 rand deposit. And if you can, all of those suggestions that you've put here in terms of reducing the cost are mostly external factors that are beyond your control. But nowhere in there do you actually talk about reducing the cost that of private healthcare that's within your control. And I remind you that there was the discussion you said with the ministry during the course of the World Cup where you would charge a rate. What was the rate?
COID, Commissioner on Injury on Duty.
That's correct. So I guess that's the reduced rate. So if you could charge a reduced rate during the World Cup, why can't you charge reduced rates during the other periods of time? Just one example, someone who's earning a salary of about 6,000 or 8,000 rand, who doesn't have a medical aid, but who could probably pay that bill over a period of 6 months to a year, that provision is not made available in private healthcare hospitals. And so you're missing a large group of people who can afford but unable to because of that barrier of deposits and so on. Is there any plan to look into that? How are you actually dealing with that? Thank you.
Let's just very clear. I think I agree with you that we understand that you are for profit. But I think, as I said, we are not fighting, but we want to see, are there any other innovations that you could do to try and make sure that these inequities that we have in South Africa are not adding to the burden of disease that we have?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I would like to start by adding my voice, you know, to the concern that, you know, we're discussing for the first time. I've had the comment, you know, this presentation, which really we appreciate very, very much. But we're disadvantaged by the fact that we're just seeing it now. Well, we've talked about that, but it's so important that, you know, we take care of that next time. Now, I just want to refer to page 9 of the presentation. South African private pricing care compares well globally. Looking at this, I noticed that, you know, all these countries that are mentioned here really are very, very wealthy, advanced countries. Even though we're saying globally, I take it that there are other global countries that we could be compared with, and to me that would make, you know, more sense. But here, they don't appear. For instance, yeah, no. I want to see, for instance, the IFSA needs and those kind of things. The middle range countries. Yes, Zimbabwe. Why not? It's a global, but perhaps it's out of the thing just now. So I think I'm just trying to say perhaps this comparison is a bit skewed. Yeah, and then now there is this matter of one wants to call it dumping because it is really dumping when people have no medical aid anymore, and then they are chased out of the private sector, and they are actually dumped on the public sector. Now, I want to point out that this matter has been looked into, by previous committees and so on and so on. Has been discussed for a long time, And really, we cannot just go on, talking about it and talking about it year in and year out. At some point, it's a very serious matter. It affects the lives of people who get, thrown out from having been in the urban area and mines and all sorts of situations, and then they go back home, and then there are serious problems there. So I'm trying to put it that it is time, really, that we do something about this one and not just keep on talking for many, many years indeed. And I know we've been talking for many years. Now, it contributes to this high mortality that we have in South Africa, and we just can't get it down because we ignore sorting out problems like this one. Now, I want to go to the way also the private sector. Private doctors are included in this, isn't it?
No.
They are not. Yeah, they are not included in HASA. Yeah, but I want to talk then about, the private hospitals and so on. The cost there is quite phenomenal. It's huge and ridiculous. He was saying, for instance, 6,000. And I know many hospitals don't want. You enter and they say 9,000. And then 1, 2, 3 days. Or the fourth day, you can't even see what has been done for the patient. The 9,000 is exhausted, and they want another 9,000. There's a lot going on there, really, which is quite unacceptable. Then there is that, because you're not even told how the first 9,000 has been in fact exhausted in such a short time. And when you look at what has been done to your G1 there, not much. That's one. Two, the private hospitals also are doing something which used to be, they're following the example of America. Yeah. Where you go in and then you will be sent to this doctor for an investigation. I'm a doctor too, to my own relative. And that investigation is not needed at all. And then that one, you just keep on doing the round. And it may even go to the extent where you need to be transported to another hospital for an investigation because it's not there yet. So I think we need to look into this because, if I can use a strong word, it's like once you are there, everybody must have a piece of you. And it looks like these arrangements are there. If you go to Mshanga Hospital, there will be a group of doctors there who must get a piece of the cake. You go to Victoria Hospital, there will be a group of doctors that you'll circulate as the patient, everyone takes a piece of you. So I think that is really bad for the patients, and it causes a lot of suffering and complaints. Thank you.
I think the, we are going to have a second round. I thought probably after this question, let's just have a short tea, and then they respond to most of those questions. And then we come back and have a second round. At least we've got enough time. We had invited other groups, but they did not come. So we're only having this group. But I must say in some of the things that have been said here, we understand where you come from. But we want to know how to work together. But I think I come back to Honorable Uma Muteswa. We should have probably invited the department to be here. And not only the department, even OCMS, the Council for Medical Aid Skills, should have been here, because the discussion would actually go on very well. So, but in any case, this was the first time that they invited you. Now we are on the know of what is going on in the hospital industry. So can we have tea, and then we come back, you respond, and then it is just 5 minutes. 5 minutes, please. Let me reiterate the thing that I said, that we called you, this is the first meeting. I'm sure I was quoted by the media when I was in Sun City where there was a BHF meeting. I was quoted, the papers quoted that part when I said, we have not looked into the private healthcare industry that well as Parliament. So we need to make sure that we understand what is going on. So this is one of those follow-ups of we're trying to do what we said we're going to do. And obviously this talks about the document that you've given us. That this document, you are not sure what you're going to give us, because we didn't tell you what to give, but we wanted to see you. But what becomes very clear is that we're in a South Africa that is, it's not skewed, but it's double in a way. On one side, if I can come from another country and come to South Africa, I come to either King Shaka Airport or to O.R. Tambo, and then I have a meeting at the airport there, and I go out. I would go out knowing that South Africa is a developed country. But at the same time, if I stay a few days and I go to the rural areas and to check, then I'll know South Africa has got two wells in one. And this is a reality that we are facing. And obviously, even health is affected by it. So this is what we are saying. But unfortunately, there seems to be very poor communication between the private healthcare industry and the Department of Health. Interestingly, the licenses that you are using, you are given by the department. It's the department that decides that there can be a private hospital here, there can be this. But after that, there seems to be no communication at all. So as to yet, the target is what? The target is to make South Africans healthy. But we seem not to be talking to each other as how do we make the South African citizens healthy. Even if it means that we say those who cannot afford the 9,000 rand that you pay when you enter, what guarantees that the government gives? Because we are in a private health, we are making profit here. So, but at the same time, every citizen belongs to government. So could you confirm that if this person doesn't have money, for the sake of the health of this person, the government can confirm that, look, we'll make sure that that amount of money will be paid by government if that person doesn't have a medical aid, if that person happens to be in that institution at that particular time and not have money. But that thing can come when there's a communication between the department and the staff. But let's give over to you. The reason why I'm talking so much, for those who came late, is because the other people that were invited, which is the Dean of Faculties of Health Sciences, have not come. They were supposed to be here. So we've got enough time not to grill Hazza, but to know what is going on. So that's why we've got enough time. That's why we can talk as much as we can. Okay, Ndatemata.
Thank you very much, Chair. First of all, let me refer this House to a report that the Hospital Association gave to the Portfolio Committee of Health in 2008-2009 called the HTG report. I know that many of you might not have been members, but I think there is a memory in Parliament. Somewhere in your library, there is this report called the HTG report, which is a detailed report about HASA's view of healthcare in the country. Secondly, it's called the HDG report. We can resend if the copies that are available are the HDG report.
Sorry, so that's HDG is the private hospital review of 2008, and there's a private hospital review of 2009, and we can forward it to you. It's also on Netcare's website, I think HASA's website, but we'll gladly forward you a copy.
Thank you very much. Again, I must reiterate, Chair, that to us this is not a grilling, because we are looking for answers for our country. We in the private sector, hospital sector, let me say, are not happy with the status quo of healthcare in our country. Therefore, we must seek for answers. We cannot, it cannot be status quo as it has been. The polarization that exists should not be there in our country. Now, I want to address myself specifically to two things, and other members of HASA will address themselves to the other things. Let me talk about primary health care. It has been proven internationally that if you concentrate on what we can call hospicentrism, every time I have a little headache, I think of going to the tertiary or quaternary hospital. This is the country, by the way, that showed the world how to transplant hearts. This is the country. If we don't know, this is also the country that showed the world what primary health care is. If you remember the history of Polela in Natal in the 1940s, that was the beginning of community-oriented primary health care. That concept was taken up to Alma Ata in 1978, where it was adopted after having been informed by other researchers of the world as a world way of dealing with primary care. And it has also been proved that if you don't have good primary care in your country, no matter how glittering your hospitals are, no matter how many professors you have, you cannot improve on health outcomes. Therefore, we as private hospitals would like an improvement of the outcomes of our nation. And an improvement of outcomes of our nation does not depend on how good we perform heart operations, because the heart operations, the cancers, and the others that are advanced come to us because we failed at primary care level. But hospitals are there anywhere in the world, whether your primary care is successful or not. So you ask, in 20 years' time, where will we be? In 20 years' time, I will be retired, if I'm still alive, but I hope that I live enough to see an improved primary health care where I would not have to go to Christian Barnard to collect my hypertension tablet, but I'll go to a local clinic next to me. But when I need hospital treatment, I will have the confidence to go into whether a private or a public hospital. The public hospital must be able to offer the same services as are offered in the private hospital. So that is why this organization participated in the roadmap to transformation of healthcare that was held at the DBSA for about a period of 10 months in 2008 that produced what we today call the 10-point plan of transformation of healthcare. So this then goes to saying, as a country, we need to go back. We have, South Africans are very interesting people because we produce beautiful policies. If you look at our blueprint for primary healthcare, it's one of the best in the world. There's one that the last one was produced in the year 2000. It is one of the best in the world as a roadmap to primary healthcare. But what are our problems? We don't have human resources. The way we manage our systems has been identified as the biggest problem. So it is wrong for honorable members to believe that if a patient has been removed from a private hospital to a public hospital, it is that makes South Africa one of the 12 worst countries in the world in terms of mortality. It is not that. It is not that. It is our poor primary health care. There is evidence ample I can share with you. I can come here and present to you an hour-long discussion on primary health care and how we should use it to develop our nation or to improve our health outcomes. Unfortunately, as the private hospital sector, it is not our area of focus. We deal with secondary and tertiary. I'm only interested in it for my own academic interests and other things. But because we are also in the health sector, it is relevant to us as HASA. That's why we also think that we should participate in those discussions. Now, somebody said, what are you contributing to, I think, Honorable Hussein? What are we contributing to the NHI? I had hoped that the chair had said that this is not what we are going to discuss. We can have a discussion about that. But in short, I can say that some of us have been proponents of a national health system long before it became fashionable to talk about the NHI here. Long before the ANC adopted NHI as a way to go in Polokwane, many of us had been discussing these issues. And when that was put as a resolution, was adopted as a resolution, at the Hospital Association, this is what we did. We have research units within the Hospital Association. We meet and discuss. We look all over the world as to how many countries are using NHI, in what form. We have made ourselves a resource in terms of knowledge. I can openly say to you that we have enough information that we can come and share with you about the NHI. And in fact, the countries that Dr. Hisana visited when she formulated the NHI, some of us have suggested that because she's the only one who has gone there, the minister has recently said that she would like to go to Brazil because it's one of those countries. Some of us have actually earlier said that maybe there should be some big team of South Africans in healthcare who could also go to those countries and see what they have done, what are the achievements that they have, what can be brought here and be adapted to South Africa. South Africa is not beginning now to talk about NHI. South Africa started in the 1940s to talk about the national health system. Therefore, we've been talking about it for too long, but we have to produce an NHI that is relevant to our country, that is all of us have contributed to, and that is going to be beneficial to all of us as a nation. Mr. Chair, we at HASA, again, I must say, submit ourselves to the nation to say we want to contribute to the improvement of healthcare. We like these discussions because people must say what they see wrong so that we all contribute to the correction thereof. We cannot continue, I repeat, with the status quo. Let me allow my colleagues to contribute, to respond to the other questions that have been asked here. Melanie?
Chair, I just want to contextualize the debate and then speak about where we see ourselves in 20 years. Just in terms of the debate, I'm not sure. No, it's good Portuguese blood. So the first thing to note is that private hospitals make up 19% of the hospitals in this country, and it is true that most of the people that use it are formerly employed people. So in terms of who has medical aid cover, if you look at households that earn 250,000 rand per year, and up 80% of them already have private medical cover. So the real issue in South Africa is grave affordability and income issues, and we know that. We know that a great bulk of our population live in poverty. And that 15% of the population that has medical aid cover, those happen to be the formerly employed. Now, We had nice growth over the last 10 years, and the reason for that is because for the first time in a very long time, we had good growth in employment, and that filtered through to medical aid coverage. So sometimes to solve the problem of access, you've got to go to the heart of the issue, which in South Africa is very low levels of formal employment. I just want to contextualize the discussions of dumping public patients or private patients on the public sector and then public patients that go to the private, because that's very valid. Sometimes when we don't know the context, we also think that the issue is very big. The Council for Medical Schemes every year publishes a report which shows you where medical schemes paid for the health service. And public hospitals make up about 5% of hospital spend by the Council for Medical Schemes. The private sector is about 95%. So that tells you that the regulation that came out, the Medical Scheme Act that was promulgated in 2000, has done a great job in reducing the amount of dumping that's going on in the private sector, and then on the public sector. And, you know, those reports are freely available on the council's website. So it is true that there is an element of it that makes 5% of total hospital spend by the medical schemes. The second issue that was discussed was that of cash-paying patients. It is true, hospitalization is expensive. The average cost of a private hospital in South Africa, this is the average, and obviously you've got people that come in and pay much less, you've got people that come in with complicated cases and pay much higher, as you referred. The average is approximately 15,000 to 16,000 rand per case. That is the average. And 95%, once again, is covered by medical aid, so now about 5% is cash-paying patients. The people that come off the street have chosen or have not been able to access public sector, so have chosen to pay out of pocket. But obviously it's totally valid that if it was cheaper, more people would make use of it. We have done some exercises to show if private hospitals in South Africa went not for profit, so you eliminate the profit margin. So the average profit margin, and sorry, I'm giving a lot of numbers, but the average profit margin is plus minus 15%. And just now, you notice what segment of total health spend. So if you had to make all private hospitals not for profit, the unfortunate reality is it only reduces your medical scheme premium by 5%. If that whole benefit came to you, because we're only about 50% of the pie, so even if you make it not for profit, it doesn't seem to really solve the problem. We need greater initiatives. In terms of, and my mother has the same theory that once you go and see a doctor, then they refer you to another doctor, to another doctor. She has the exact same theory. She believes it's this great conspiracy. And I guess the one issue to note is that we don't employ the doctor. And there are a lot of issues in terms of the integration of care that become very important. You know, public health systems, performance can be good or bad depending on how that system is integrated, coordination of primary health care, coordination of services, and that's totally valid. So that is an inefficiency that we have in our system, that we haven't been able to employ doctors. But what I can tell you is that before you get admitted into hospital, your medical scheme has to pre-authorize. They have to say it is okay. Given what you've got, it is allowed. And then once you're in hospital, they've got what is called case management. So the medical scheme and the hospital are talking every day. This is what's happened. Victor Dikikanyani needs to stay another day for this reason. We don't approve it, we do approve it. So there's a lot of communication, and the medical scheme definitely tries to preserve and ensure that there's no over-servicing once you are in hospital. So hopefully that can give you an element of comfort. But I do accept that it's difficult to control the tests at a doctor level. In terms of the vision and the dream for 20 years' time, I'm going on 38, so I hope that I'll still be working and participating in the health system. And recently, I've had the benefit of visiting Brazil, where the health system in Brazil is more integrated. The private spend on health is exactly the same as us. So when the question was asked about where other countries that are more our peer countries reflect in terms of costs, They're actually exactly the same level of spend as the private sector in South Africa, so private Brazil, private South Africa. Do you know that the Department of Health in Brazil outsources 70% of all hospitalization? So they purchase these services from the private sector. So they've got a contracting body, and they've scaled up to get these services. They find a way of determining correct prices that they're happy with and that the private sector is willing to do the business for. So that's a nice balance that you've got to find. But after many years of working on this, 70% of hospital services are outsourced. And they're allowed to employ doctors. It's a more of an integrated model. They've got more of what they call, I don't know if you know, HMOs, health maintenance organizations. So that's where the insurer also owns, the hospital also owns the primary health care, and the whole system just becomes more integrated. You try and control that care. So when I think of our vision for South Africa in years to come, it is one where people can use a national network. Is it private? Is it public? It doesn't matter. If it's a public patient, the government or the Department of Health contracts at the prices that they've agreed with the private sector. If it's a medical scheme, they also contract. But everyone is free to go to any of the facilities, and care is more coordinated. And I think that what that requires is exactly as Victor suggested. We need protocols between the private and the public, and we need contracts. We do have spare capacity. We could either sell it, we could sell, you know, beds where the public sector doctors come in and make use of these beds, or we could sell the whole service of theatre nurses. We have options. You know, in the UK, I don't know if you know, but we Netcare has about 50 hospitals in the United Kingdom. The National Health Service now makes up 16% of the volume that we see. So we have a contract with the government. We'll see their patients, and they will pay us the fee that we've contracted at. We've also done waiting list contracts. For example, we had a contract to do 35,000 cataract surgeries for the National Health Service in the UK. And we were able to do that at the price that was agreed, which was, at that time, it was closer to public sector prices, and we did it successfully. The way we manage quality is we had to fill in all of these quality forms and prove our quality, because that's very important. To build the trust, you've got to ensure that you're doing a good job. And it's all possible. If you've got the right attitude and the right intention, it is possible to have a more integrated health system. So that's my vision for 20 years.
Probably, I think you're getting the point. I know the advocate is going to be answered. I think you can get the point that we're trying to do. We don't know what's happening in the private healthcare industry, but we want to know, because all the people that are voting us, they are neither private or public, but they are people of South Africa. And we need to understand that, and in any case, even the licenses that we have, you get them from government. So we need to understand that so that we can make sure that we have. But the main thing is that we need some suggestions from you to how do we better the situation of South Africa. And I think you are coming closer to that, and I'm very happy that we are getting closer. On the primary health care, this is the whole point that I must ask. But we are saying, if I'm in your hospital, I get out, how do you help me to improve that primary health care that is in Tata? That is our policy as government, but we seem not to be doing well in that particular policy of ours. If this is where I want you to help me, advocate.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to try and answer some of the questions that were directed to HASA specifically, and then also some of the issues that you raised around emergency health care. First, I want to thank you for asking these questions. I think they're important ones, and I'll try to do so sequentially. The Hospital Association defines its memberships in accordance with private hospitals, as are licensed in terms of Regulation 158, which is the minimum standards applicable to private hospitals. It's old legislation. It was promulgated under the 1977 Act. It's still in force. it's old legislation, and the reason why I want to say it's old is because I think personally it's subject to reconsideration, and it's something that we should be looking at. But how we define our membership is, in order to qualify as an ordinary member, which has full membership rights within our association, you must have a license in terms of Regulation 158. Now, what we've tried to do is, over the last couple of years, is try and recognize all the private establishments within the country, in order to correctly identify our own membership. Now, what we have is a rule that you can't join with just one hospital if you have many. So Netcare, for example, can't just join with one hospital, they must join with all of them. Unfortunately, some hospitals, and the independent ones, the ones that don't have the cross-subsidies of the groups, very often have other hospitals as well, and they don't join with full membership. So there's a percentage of them that are not counted because three of their four hospitals are not on our books as members. So that comprises some of the 10%. The other 10% is made up by new license facilities, people who have got licenses for the first time and they're operating and don't necessarily want to join a voluntary association at this stage. They're probably looking to recoup their capital expenditure. But what we have seen over the last couple of years is a significant growth among CrossFit membership, and I think as people start seeing value in the representative body, it starts bringing an ethical tone to the country as a whole. At this point, I really want to answer the question of the WIP, which is, well, you know, you're a representative body, why did you deal with price? And why aren't you talking about price and those type of discussions for the benefit of the public? Well, it's very simple, and you'll forgive me for being very lawyerish again, but competition law in this country prohibits it. Very specifically, we cannot sit around the same table and discuss prices or even compare prices. We can't even, as competitors, discuss how we want to discount, because all of that would be in contravention of the Competition Act, and we would be fined 10% of our turnovers. And not only that, but every single person who was in that room faces a very lengthy prison sentence. And not only that, even our insurance companies would not cover us for any of the fines that we would incur for anti-competitive behavior. So in the past, we used to have a negotiation platform. The Competition Commission intervened, stopped that across the sector in order to encourage competition. And what happens now is individual hospitals will negotiate with individual medical schemes on an annual basis. And this is where those negotiations happen. Reference has been made, for example, to alternative reimbursement models. Every one of the members in HASA negotiate different types of pricing packages. It's highly competitive, it's intellectual property, so they wouldn't want to, you know, let their competitors down the road know exactly how they're negotiating with medical schemes. But having said that, some hospitals do a basic pricing model, which they do make available to the public. They put it on their websites, for example. MediClinic is a very good example of that, where they actually publish it so that people can look at a reference pricing and how that price is structured for each particular patient. So the patient knows exactly what they're getting for their rand. And let me tell you, we've got some very interesting patients out there, and this is a personal experience I had with a 16-year-old who informed me that part of the tariff was his right to a television, which on this particular occasion wasn't working, so we had to get him one. So they are certainly acutely aware, and not only making themselves aware, in terms of law, we are obliged, in terms of the final invoice which we present to patients, to structure every single cost item so that they're entitled to every single bit of detail as to what actually happened. So that's very simply why we don't speak to price issues or universal discounting or anything like that. It's largely because we're prohibited from law in terms of doing that. When it comes to you know, what we as a body are doing in regards to investigating our members and upholding an ethical code, I think that's a very important question. Unfortunately, in the past, it was very much a situation where ethical codes which were applicable to practitioners or nurses were developed in isolation. You would find, for example, the Nursing Council would develop an ethical code for nurses, the doctors would do one for themselves, and oh yes, wait, hold on, there's another party in the works, and that's hospitals. perhaps maybe we should consolidate our thinking in this regard and come up with a comprehensive combined approach to developing ethical codes. And the reason why I say that is because doctors and nurses work within private hospitals, and we're not an island unto ourselves. I must commend your acting registrar of the HPCSA, Marilla O'Reilly, who is making a sincere effort to understand private hospitals and how we conduct business and how we work with doctors for the very purposes of improving how things are happening. It's long overdue, and I think it's an initiative which we certainly encourage by. What are we doing as a representative body? Well, we're firstly trying to educate people, and I think that is something which you yourself have mentioned, and I think it's critical. Very often, misconception results because we don't understand how sectors work. One of those misconceptions are that private hospitals turn away patients who present without money or emergencies, in emergency-type situations. What people don't understand is because we don't employ doctors, if a doctor turns away a patient, it doesn't mean that the hospital had anything to do with that decision. In fact, it's more likely that the hospital has provided the resources, the nurses, on a 24-hour basis to ensure that patients get treated. And if a doctor takes it upon himself to not either present themselves at a hospital when called to do so, or returns or refuses to see that particular patient, very often it's a decision which the doctor makes, which brings the hospital into disrepute, particularly in the mind's eye of the public. And we've had situations where doctors have done that, and we've referred them to the HPCSA, and we've certainly gone as far as we can in terms of ensuring that there's a disciplinary approach to that. But having said that, it's also imperative that we as hospitals come to the party on that issue. So what we've done as a representative body is we've amended our articles of association, which is binding on every person who wants to stick a hospital sticker on its door, that if you want to belong to the association and use the credibility of the association, you must adhere to our ethical code. And our ethical code very specifically talks to what to do under emergency situations. That patients will not be turned away. If they are presented an emergency, we will do our level best to ensure that they are treated and stabilized to the best of our abilities within our scopes of practice. If a hospital violates that ethical code, it will be elevated up to an ethics committee, where we have the right, for example, to co-opt members who are not necessarily hospitals. We could co-opt a member of the HPCSA, for example, or a member of the legal fraternity in order to administer that particular ethical process. We can impose fines on our members. We can refer them to statutory bodies for the purposes of a further investigation if need be. But I think one of the critical things that we need to address is that currently within the legislative framework there are some weaknesses. I'm taken back a couple of years when we first passed the National Health Act. I came to the actual National Assembly and I lobbied government very hard to incorporate within the National Health Act a formal definition of what constitutes an emergency, because no such definition exists within the National Health Act. I think that's a mistake. If you don't define what constitutes an emergency, you leave it up to interpretation. And of course, you have good doctors and you have bad doctors. The Medical Schemes Act does have a formal definition of what constitutes an emergency. And if we compare what happens within the medical schemes environment with what happens outside of it, you can see a marked difference in terms of how things are approached. Perhaps maybe because there's a formal definition within the Medical Schemes Act as to what constitutes an emergency and what constitutes emergency medical treatment. In other words, what is the obligation under that emergency type situation? Currently, within the National Health Act, we don't have that formal definition of what constitutes an emergency. That's probably something which we can look at. It doesn't necessarily mean we have to change the Act, because in terms of Section 90, the Minister of Health has the prerogative to make regulation pertaining to any aspect of the National Health Act. Which brings me back some of the points which we said on a repeated basis, it's critical that we have formal discussions between the public and private sector, not just on, you know, protocols, which are nice in terms of public-private partnerships, but also on the fundamentals, like how do we interpret what constitutes an emergency? What do we do under an emergency situation? How do we hold doctors, nurses, and hospitals accountable for failures to deal with these types of things? Those are the discussions we've not had, and I think it's long overdue that we start having them, so that we can come up with a comprehensive transfer protocol as to what happens, how we transfer patients, for example. We have very informal processes at this stage, and I must say that over the last couple of years, things have got to the stage now where our public sector counterparts phone us and we phone them, and we have very good working relationships with some hospitals. We say, look, you know, we don't have any ICU beds. Are you able to help? And we will open up our ICU facilities and we will take those patients in accordance with just an informal discussion between sectors. We could elevate that really up to a more national level, a more comprehensive one, based on some really sincere partnering of between the sectors. I also want to just briefly touch on a question you said, well, what are you doing internally to reduce your costs? And I think I'm just going to speak to some of the legal aspects. If we look at Regulation 158 and why I said it was probably old legislation, it's how it works at the moment is that the Regulation 158 applies to all private hospitals. It's devolved to the provinces to enforce on a license basis. Once the license is given, that's not the end that we see of the Department of Health. We actually see them on a yearly basis in terms of an operational renewal of that license. They come and inspect the facilities. But the point I want to make is that Regulation 158 generally tends to lump all private health establishments into one category. It says you will have a 2-meter-wide corridor, for example, which makes perfectly good sense when you've got theatres with beds where you have to push beds past patients. But why does that particular regulation apply to psychiatric hospitals, which don't have surgeries and don't have beds? If you narrow the passageway, they could reduce costs in terms of your construction, and perhaps it's time that we started actually having regulations specific to the type of facilities that we have, so that we don't put impediments to reducing costs from a construction point of view, from a quality point of view. We can develop models which are specific to the needs of patients. So you have a psychiatric hospital which currently is subject to Regulation 158. It's also subject to its own rules of interpretation in terms of the general regulations of the Mental Health Care Act, which all add on to cross-referencing difficult interpretations, and perhaps maybe that's something that we should be looking at as well. What we've done at CASA is we've made submission to the department on numerous bases. I think that they could be looking, in terms of the legislative impediments themselves, as ways of just reducing the overall cost to healthcare delivery in terms of how we construct our models and how we equip our models and those type of things. The other thing I want to mention very briefly is when it comes to HASA's complaint process, what have we done? Over the last couple of years, we have made it a particular function of HASA to expand our services not only to our own members, but to members of the public. They lodge complaints with us. We facilitate those complaints. We investigate them when we feel that they require investigation, and we'll take our members to task on several issues, even if it means publicly, as I've done in the press on numerous occasions. And I must say, what pleases me is that very often I don't have to do that, just merely meeting with the hospitals, making them aware of some failings within the system is good enough, and they really make those changes. It's working so well that the health department now refers complaints to HASA to deal with when they receive complaints from members of the public, and the same happens with the Health Professions Council. So there is some credibility there, and certainly, you know, that whole process is open to scrutiny, and you're welcome to see it. And we're certainly trying, but there's always room for improvement, and I'm the first to admit that, and I hope that answers some of your questions.
But you're going to take even that, the minister's one, that he has mentioned about the 500,000 payment. You'll investigate it. Okay, Memore, Mama Fola, and then Mike. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. A lot of questions from my side have been answered, particularly issues of disciplinary measures against doctors who behave unethically, and issues of case management, because around 2006 there was a private hospital around Soweto which was very, very notorious with admitting people for a minimum at least of 3 days, just, you know, under the auspices that someone has to be observed in hospital for 3 days, something like that, doesn't the newspaper. So I'm happy that there's case management in terms of contacting and communicating with the medical aid scheme. My main issue particularly is on HR planning. Having worked in a hospital environment, we train particularly allied medical workers, and you know, you are good in terms of attracting and, you know, recruiting the staff, and obviously with the best packages they will definitely come to you. But do you, as an association representing the hospitals, the private hospitals, I mean, in future, foresee any plans where you can increase the number of people that you train, be it doctors, nurses, anyone? Because in the public sector, we train a lot of professionals, but eventually they all migrate to you guys. And yes, it makes sense. Your package is good. They go to UK, blah blah blah. And nationally, I think we all know that we've got a shortage of medical workers. But if the private sector can also, as a cost making type of organization, also train, maybe increase the number of training of any professional health category. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks, Asa, for the response and the presentation. Chairperson, my question is just a smaller yellow one. I was covered by the response that was given, and it tell us that we should prioritize to meet, even if it's HASA and the Medical Aid Scheme Board, because the HASA will tell us that the people who are saying no, the limitation are over a Medical Aid Scheme, and the Medical Aid Scheme will tell us that HASA is the hospital is the one who is taking the person to the public hospital. My question is on that one of the primary health care. I think you have covered me when you said that what does HASA is doing to see that the public is having a good primary health care. As I have seen through their presentation, they are having that thing of 2010 readiness. So I just want to find out from them that what about this HIV and AIDS campaign that we are holding now as the department, because it doesn't appear here. Thanks.
You want to know, Mama Fale, whether they've tested. It starts with them, whether they've tested.
Not the chairperson, just to say that the government is running a campaign, and our target is meeting 15 million. What they are doing to help the government, because they are admitting patients who are very sick to what I think they must go. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. And let me apologize for the record for being late to you and our guests. I've just got a few comments to make and a question or two. With regards to the perceived high cost of private medical care as opposed to the state health care, I think we need to, you know, we're not comparing apples with apples. I mean, I think we all know that if you go to a private hospital compared to a state hospital, the quality is very much different. And even if you look at the budget from the health department to the state, to the provinces, I mean, all provinces overspent last year to the tune of 12 billion rand. So even by rationing health services in the public sector and having a lower level of service, quality of service, they're still overspent by 12 billion. That shows you that the cost of healthcare is increasing public and private. And for me, it's not the sole issue or the driver, but the main issue is the cost of human resources. And Honourable Moray has raised it, but the fact is that we have a chronic lack of doctors and nurses in the public and the private sector. And obviously, with the implementation of the OSD, it's really driven up the costs of healthcare. Now, just wondering from the from HASA side, I know you now, well, the private hospitals now, as far as I know, produce more than half of the nurses in the country. But I believe you're restricted in the number of nurses you can actually train every year. And if you could just unpack that for us and explain to us what the restrictions are, so maybe we could then take it up to the department to get those restrictions lifted, because we certainly do need more nurses in the country. And as far as doctors are concerned, the minister mentioned when he came to see us last time that the universities have no more capacity. Now, I was at a workshop yesterday on the NHI itself, up in Johannesburg, and one of the models that was presented as an alternative was the Columbian model. And and someone asked the presenter, well, do you have a shortage of doctors? And he says, no, we have too many doctors. We're actually exporting them. And it came out that they have allowed the private sector to open medical schools. They have 58 medical schools in Colombia. I think we have 7 or 8. And they're now exporting doctors. And why can't we do it? Why can't we produce enough doctors that we are exporting them? We are exporting anyway to England and America and New Zealand, wherever now. We're just not doing it voluntarily. They're stealing our doctors and nurses. So why not produce enough that we can export nurses and doctors if people want to go? So I just want to get some feedback from the class on that one. Then on the NHI itself, Chair, I know I heard comments you didn't want anyone to raise it, but the whip has raised it. HASA did do a costing analysis themselves, which they released last week, and maybe we could get a copy of that as well. We can request them to give us a copy. But if they could just very briefly, and I don't mean extensively, just unpack the basic issues, the costing of their costing, and based on what? On the quality of the current private health system being transferred, to the public sector, or what quality we're talking about and what access to healthcare we're talking about. And I agree with you, Chair, that we've heard the ministers going overseas to Brazil to look at different models, and it's great, but I think as a committee, we need to be briefed on different models around the country, around the world. And what we should be doing, I think, in order to inform ourselves of the debate that's going to come with NHI, because NHI is just a funding model. I mean, it's not about changing the structure of the health system. And maybe we want to change the structure to make it more efficient and more effective and more responsive, is that we get experts in from different countries on different models that are available to ourselves, instead of just having, this vision of only one particular model that can work. Because if we are going to do something for the health system, we may as well look for the best possible options now while, the issue's on the table, and influence the process as best we can. Thank you.
We wouldn't like to go into detail as far as NHI is concerned. But as it is said, that NHI is just a funding model. But discussing what we can do to have universal coverage of healthcare, I don't think there's a problem in that. So you can go into detail and tell us what you mean. I'm not sure. Maybe we can debate this, Mike. I'm not sure whether we've got shortage of doctors in South Africa. Because most of the time when we're talking about shortage, we're talking about the public health care. But if you look at the GPs that are outside, that are not being utilized, you might find that if we could have that working relationship, and this is one of the reasons why we said we needed to look at this private health care industry, be it private doctors, be it hospitals, be it medical aid, we need to understand what is going on, because we may find that we don't have the shortage that we're talking about. But I'm not saying that they mustn't answer your question, they mustn't go into your question. But if you look at GPs, every small town, they've got about two, three GPs who are working on their own, having nothing to do with the hospital, not even doing the part-time work. And if we could engage them and make them work, you'll find that there's not much shortage. But this is something that we can engage in another time. There was another hand. Oh, McCain. It's International Nurses Day, by the way. When is your 100 minutes? They said every nurse, whether it's a parliamentarian, they must have 100 minutes work in a public institution. When are you going to have your...
After plenary.
After plenary.
I think I'm covered by the advocate in some of my questions. My questions were directly on page 5, number 25, and also on page 6, bullet number 1. I was concerned because we always say these things, and the issue of this reimbursement and the issue of these missing cases, really, because this is a problem. Maybe we have not done, maybe we've not done enough breakthrough. We've got a narrow breakthrough in the private partnerships as government. Because really these things are always in paper. But when we go down there, patients are suffering. I remember sometimes patients with disembowelment being chased away by the private hospitals, not regarding the life of the patient. And as we say that, you know, ethical codes, doctors and nurses are got an obligation of quality care and sanctity of life and quality of life, also including government, also concerned about the quality of health care for all South Africans. Now, but I still have a question. How do we see this happening? I never saw a patient being treated without a reimbursement from somewhere, either from public to private. Maybe you can elaborate more about that. How can mechanisms of doing these things? Because sometimes these things are in paper, and when you go to the patients, especially those patients who are down there, as Secretary Minister said, that we are concerned about the population of South Africa who are voting for the government, and now we are in government. So, as representatives, we are very worried because these things which you see in these papers, because even when the advocate was talking about the, I was surprised how do ordinary people that know about HASA down there. Because at the same time, we categorize those people. Not all of them will go and complain because some are illiterate, some maybe don't have papers, are poor. I don't know whether there are any talk shows so that it can disseminate to all the angles of the, where people are. Because really, where I live also in Jefferson, I don't think in my rural area they do know about HASA. And they won't be able now to complain when they are chased away by these private hospitals. Really, maybe there's something, I don't know whether you have any talk shows to reach those people. Maybe you can just, I can recommend that you make a proper outreach to the people down there. Also on page 12, you have solutions. I can see your solutions in page 12. And also the solutions are on strengthening the improvement of risk subsidies and improvement, and also the reviews of reviewers of some of the regulations. Now, yes, of course, you have the solutions. When you go to page 14, you say your meetings are cancelled. Most of the meetings are being cancelled on page 14. So now it contradicts me. I don't know, I'm confused where maybe it's a gray area for me. When you look at these meetings being cancelled at page 14 with a private sector, but in page 16 there is preparedness. But when you look at the preparedness now, you see the private sector now emerging there, as there are meetings now that are successful in page 16. And as you see in the table of that business and the support of the private sector. Just now, if you can just remove that gray area for me, that if the meetings are not sitting, are being cancelled, now how do we say there is preparedness in page 16 and 17 for the support you are talking about? I think I must stop there because some of my questions have been asked and have been answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. I don't think the last one. Oh, the last one. Yeah, the last. Okay, my good. I would like you to record this. I think we've identified that as a problem of communication between the public health and the private and HASA. If you could be specific and say, how are we supposed to be connecting each other? Mm-hmm. Are we connecting each other through the DG, or there is a directory that is so that we can know exactly where to? Because I think one of the problems here is the communication between the department and the hospital. Yes, Matthew?
Chairperson, that time when I said I forgot one question. I wanted to check with HASA if they say 10% of some of the hospitals are not registered with them or they are not their name. The clarity that I'm seeking is that when we say, let's say, Netcare Hospital is national, do they have a body that is representing Netcare National, or they deal with individual hospitals? Let's say Netcare in Gauteng can say, I don't want to be a member, but Netcare in Devon is a member. That's the question I'm trying to ask. The other request is that, is it possible for them to provide us with a list of hospitals that they are members. But also the question of us doing oversight. I know that in farms, we are told that this is private owned. You don't have access. What is their position around members visiting those hospitals? Do we have access to these hospitals? And what influence do we have? And what can we say around that? And also the monitoring of, like, let me just put it this way. Do they have inspectors that check these hospitals? Because I know of one private hospital that I've realized that it has, this English is too big. should I say dilapidated, or maybe that the standard is no longer of that, you know, when one enters that hospital, you don't feel that you are in private hospital. It's like, you know, gone and forgotten. It's an old hospital, but it's still regarded as a private hospital. Do they have people who monitor, you know, like inspectors, these hospitals that have affiliated to them? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, looking at the document doesn't say much about when was this association established and what was its intention and how far have they gone to ensure that those intentions are achieved. But anyhow, that might be in their previous documents because, you know, as a new member in Parliament, you know, in your legacy report, perhaps you might find that to say that when they were formed, this is what they intended to do. And then perhaps that will also expand in our efforts of oversight on their workings. Now, I think for purposes of for me to, you know, to be more objective, I'd be grateful if those documents can arrive at our position on time, so that perhaps when we do preparations in the near future, you know, you are able to say, in terms of what you said in your presentation, the previous parliament versus this parliament, that has not been happening. And then these are the shortcomings. Because my interest, very much so, Chairperson, like you said it the best, is that, you know, the intervention of the association at the level between a patient and their member hospitals, how far they go, you know. That's actually my interest. Because if the existence of the association does not bring the patient copying, you know, but copying approach, how far are they with? If you talk of Katupil, you are not referring to hospital in this case. I don't know, that principle adopted by the country, what is the situation with HAFSA? So those are the areas that I think they are still a bit grey, if you were to give that in Jilam. Now I think they will be painted white as time develops, when you have this information at your disposal. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll address the HR issues that are very passionate to me. Maybe also to echo your views about nursing and necessarily a very important part of our health system. And some of them are doing the health care, in fact. So, and... I think the reality is that, and I respect your view, Chair, but our view is that there's definitely a shortage of health professionals in the country. And I'll start with nurses, first of all. I think, first of all, in nursing, we all remember that, and I was still in the Free State at that time, we actually closed down our nursing colleges in government, and we actually had reduced training in the public sector. During that period, private sector had to increase its training. In fact, at the point where actually, although we have about like 19% of the beds, we actually produced half of the nurses in the country. So we actually have done a lot to train nurses in the private sector. However, there have been impediments. We'd have to train more nurses, but there are impediments in the system. First of all, in terms of the crisis, we're not allowed to train the four-year program in the private sector, mainly because it's a four-year program that integrates midwifery. And because our nurses don't do delivery that are done by obstetricians, there are issues there as well about whether we can get that course or not. The training that's done in the private sector, and I can speak for all the groups that we're all doing training. We train a lot of nurses, and I think very, very good quality nurses. Is that we do a training that's basically a bridging program. We start, first of all, training people as assistant nurses, then they become enrolled nurses, then they then bridge to become professional nurses. So that's the way we do that. So that's why you find our nurses in our hospitals are actually single qualified. Nurses here will understand what I mean by that. They are just health nurses. And then we will then do things that we're allowed to do by the nursing council, which is theater nursing, ICU, specialization. And many of them qualify in that sense. We don't actually have nurses that do the full integrated program ourselves. However, we do provide also bursaries to nurses that are doing the four-year program through universities that are funded by our group, so they will also support that program. The fact is that we as a country decided to reduce our nurse training output, and that came back to haunt us, definitely. There's definitely a shortage of nurses in the country. We actually have a nurse that we are sharing now between public and private. This is the stuff we call that they are mood lighting. Basically, it's a common pool that we use between ourselves because of a dear shortage of nurses in the country. And I think we have done a disservice to the country by not training nurses adequately for the country, and it's a detriment to ourselves. And primary health care suffers because we don't train primary health care nurses because we don't have, as you know, we don't actually have primary health care services that are expected required for that training as well. And we have a long way to go. There are discussions that are happening now, as you may know, that Nursing Council is now reviewing the scope of practice of nurses, the new ways of training that are coming up, and I hope the government has to look at some of those changes that we believe some of them are not necessarily good for the country. Some of them are taking a step backwards, and we need to work on those things and see how we can go forward to make sure that we have enough nurses in this country. My wife is a nurse. That's another thing I have passion. I'm passionate about nursing. I left too early this morning. I had to leave at 3 a.m. to get you on time. Let me move on to the issue of doctors. Since I qualified for Tai University, and it's many years after you qualified, Chair Dr. Matlala, as well.
You have to tell us what you mean.
We have not increased the number of doctors we produce. There's no way we can say that enough doctors when we're not well. We produce a constant number of doctors for so many, many years when there's population growth in our country. When a number of doctors, we know, for example, there's half of their students every year are left to the well. They actually leave the country. There's definitely a shortage of doctors in the country. And yes, the few that are there now, we probably could use them more effectively. I agree with you on that, but there's definitely a need for that. Interesting enough, talking about the Colombian example, we went to government a few years ago with the previous minister, and we said, will you allow us to establish a not-for-profit private medical school just to help to train more doctors? That was not accepted. So we have actually made offer to say we also want to participate in that. We do help a lot in the academic hospitals to train. We provide bursaries, we provide funding for all sorts of things that happen in medical schools. So try and help them to try and produce more. But the capacity is defined by your teaching beds. We have made offer to say, look, why don't you actually use our facilities as well for training? And the view has always been that they want to expose students and registrar to our services because they are worried that they will actually come over to us. But we're saying this actually is a national resource. We have hospitals that can be useful for training. And we made that offer to them, say it's available to ourselves. Our specialists that are working in private sector are prepared to become, to lecture, to support, to become consultants for government in that setting, but that has not been taken. So if you can assist us to open up that debate, so at least we can work together, because I believe that the seven medical schools capacity is actually, it can't improve any further. Unless doctor training is based on is around the patient. You need more beds, you need more patients to work with, or else you cannot actually do much more. So that's our plea, that there's definitely an area there that we can work together. We also train other health professionals. We train, for example, pharmacy assistants. So it's not just nurse and doctor. So the idea is we're also involved. There's this issue before I... Radiographers, they're not employed by us, actually employed by the radiologists, but they do train. Yeah, they do train. However, we also train therapists, radiation therapists, those that are involved in oncology, but we train them. The last point I want to make was really about packages and salaries. It's interesting, there's this view that we pay better than the private policy. It's actually not true. It's not true. If you look at the packages, and my wife has done that very well, government actually pays very well compared to what we do. It's how, you must look at a total package. But maybe nurses don't look it that way, I don't know. But it's not actually true. And what has been done to show that this is not actually the case. But the other reason is why people stay or want to come to the private sector. And I think something that we've said to our colleagues in the public sector, it's not just about salaries. It's also about the working conditions, how you look after your people, how you ensure that they feel cared for. And today, all of us here celebrated International Nurses Day. But go to the, you see how much nurses are appreciated. They actually feel like today is their day, they're appreciated. It's for them a very important event. So let me stop there.
I think that matter, if you listen this morning to the lady who was talking on behalf of nurses, if there was a specific question that was asked by the lady, who's the lady who's on TV, the morning line? She asked specifically that, is it not a problem, the salary? And the nurse was there, she's a doctor something. She said, no, it's not about the salary, but this whole lot of other things being taken care of. When I'm talking about the doctors, I'm not sure, I've never done a research, but I think we know how many doctors we have looking at the register, and we know how many doctors are in private practice. But there doesn't seem to be that good working relationship between the GPs and our public institutions. This is where I feel if we could make use of them, probably would be. Looking at our health faculties and the increase in population, I think you're right, Victor. But if you look at it, Medunza came after, which was purely training African, and Walter Sisulu came after, which was training purely, there's everybody, but mainly East Africa. But if you take those ones, and most of the time when you are trained, you actually fall around that area. You find that there's a lot of doctors from Medusa that are around Pretoria, exactly the same in the rural area of Umtata. This is where I'm saying, much as we need more, we are not utilizing the ones that we have optimally. I'm talking about doctors. I'm not talking about nurses. I'm just talking about doctors. I think maybe at the end, when we summarize this, we need to take up some of the things that he has said. And it revolves around this communication with the department. There's a lot of people that have come to me saying that you want to open up a private medical school. I haven't had answers to whether they should or they shouldn't, but I think we should open up the debate and see whether that can be looked into.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will not repeat what my colleague has said, except to say that for the last 3 years, I'm also a member of the College of Medicine, and for the last 3 years, we've been engaged in meetings at the College of Medicine to say how do we improve doctor training in the country. The College of Medicine produces or adjudicates production of specialists in the country. By determination, the number that we have arrived at now is that we need to produce at least 1,000 specialists a year to fill the deficit in the next 5 years. And we've come up with a plan. We've called the minister. We're going to have a meeting with the minister shortly to say, this is what we think we can do. And among the things that we think we can do, between the heads of departments who you say should have been here today and the College of Medicine, is that private hospitals, like my colleague has said, are prepared to open our hospitals as a platform for training, knowing that there has been even shortage of technology development within our public sector or some of our public sector hospitals. So this is the role that the private sector is playing with the College of Medicine, and we hope that by the end of this year there might be an answer as to how we are going to jack up the training of specialists. By the way, the College has already had a discussion with Treasury, and Treasury is saying that yes, they could look at increasing funding as soon as we have an agreement or an understanding with the Minister of Health.
In fact, I thought that we were going to call the College of Medicine at some stage to come here and tell us, but we wanted to call all the deans first, and probably come to that. But you'll be part of that team too that will come. But I know. They used to be, but it was in the olden days. As you can see, I'm bald. But they used to be feeling then that Africans could never be good specialists. I'm sure what I'm saying is not something. You know when I went for an exam to be a specialist, one of my trainers, which was YKC back then, he came to me and said, "Look, Tiff, if you go there, you must be 2 times your white counterpart to pass that exam." I'm not sure. The reason why we want to call the College of Medicine is to see whether they've transformed. Because increasing the numbers without the quality might not help us without transforming it. Because that time, it was not transformed totally. And in fact, the interesting thing is that the person who was for Africans in that college was Ralph Cash. The person who just died here. He's the one who was fighting for Africans. Otherwise, most of the other guys, if you're an African, they will throw you out. And you can imagine how many of us were trying to be specialists, but were refused to become specialists. I think those who came, sometimes people would actually say that you're an informer, that's why you're passing. But I was fortunate I passed, but it was not. But I'm saying that I wanted to look at that transformation, whether he's transformed, but we'll look into it. That was the last question, so you want to respond?
Yes, thanks, Chair. Can I respond to the questions about FIFA World Cup preparedness and designated hospitals, and also to the question on the HIV counselling and testing campaign? I think just to quickly to sketch the situation, that, and I'm only speaking with the private sector hospitals, generally all private hospitals do have some disaster plan available. What is happening around World Cup is that there's an increased risk because of the mass gatherings and also the possibility of infection. So it's not only some a stampede or something in the stadium, but also the possibility of many people being together and the risk of infections being transmitted. Swine flu is a novel influenza is one of the examples. So the private hospitals are gearing up and really refreshing their emergency plans. And there's a nationally accepted course called Hospital Medical Major Incident Medical Management and Support, or HMIMS, which is being rolled out. And I think all three groups are rolling it out. Medicare is probably has every one of the hospitals, if I understand correctly, because has had this. And we're rolling it out in other groups as well. So that is what is happening in terms of preparedness. In terms of the communication and coordination at national level, it is, as already been stated, there's no communication on FIFA World Cup between the Department of Health and the private hospital sector. Those meetings have been repeatedly cancelled, as has been stated, and I think there's not been one meeting for at least 10 months, even though initially they were set up as early as 2006. So what has happened is that a lot of work is being done at local level, often driven by the provincial coordinator. I think there are three provinces that I know, I think, are well in advance. That's Northwest, Western Cape, and Mpumalanga has an active provincial coordinator. In most of the other provinces, the communication is null or very poor. So it does depend on individuals, but there's no coordination from local. Dr. Masala mentioned the agreement, or you're trying to get a final agreement, but the point is it's not business as usual, really, because of the increased risk of a disaster happening. One of the members asked about the list of designated hospitals. That list is available. We can supply it. It is available from the coordinating committee, and I'm happy to send it, any one of us. I think, in fact, maybe if it comes from HASA, because I think HASA has now got the official updated list. So if we could ask to send it. Then I think... Yes, and then on the HIV counselling and testing campaign, I think it has varied, but certainly the public sector are involved and supporting. At the national launch, the private and NGO sectors were asked to assist, and I think, if I remember correctly, more than half of the testing stations were staffed by private sector and NGOs like Right to Care and so on. So the private sector is actively involved in supporting that. And also I know within our group, and other groups could speak for themselves, that we are planning to roll this out and have the campaign in our facilities for any patients who want, or not patients, any public who want to come in and be tested. And in line with the guidelines, it's not HIV testing, it's HIV, blood glucose, blood pressure, and so on. That whole package that is being offered. I think that's the role that we are playing. And there's also financial support to the program. And if that clarifies the questions asked by the members. Thank you.
Yeah, just to some of the questions which haven't been answered, Dr. Frankis is quite correct. On the launch, actually, 50% of the stores that were doing the testing... I've been made feel like that all my life. 50% of the stores were actually manned by the private sector. We've been involved quite significantly with the minister in this campaign. We think it's very important. From HASA's perspective, we facilitated that information to all our members. Some of those member hospitals, as has been quite rightly said, have opened up their facilities. We'll be testing all patients that present in accordance with the protocols by the Department of Health. Other hospitals have contributed financially, and some hospitals better still have actually allocated staff to go and assist in the public sector. So there's many examples like that. It always saddens me that these initiatives are very often not known to the broader public, and certainly to yourselves, because this is only one example of how we can actually synergize our efforts. There's historically the Right to Sight campaign, where numerous private sector hospitals actually facilitated state patients getting cataract surgery to the tune of thousands of them over the last couple of years. And it's really a good example of how we can work together. We also have hospitals that are offering their communities free circumcisions and have been for years. And they've been doing that on an annual basis. What I want to just answer some of the questions, Ken. Sorry? This particular hospital opens it up to the community, and the community avails their male children for circumcision. And it's done actually both. To answer your question, can AK join in just one province and not others? No, they join as a company. All the hospitals join. Every single hospital doesn't have a choice. That's a decision that the board took, which is represented by Netcare, Life, and Mediclinic. All of those groups join with all their members. So you won't have inconsistency in terms of how things operate in one province as opposed to another. can you have a copy of our costing model? With pleasure. It's a public document. It's on Iconic's website. We can send that to you. Can you also have a copy of our membership list? No problem, that's public information as well. We'll make sure that you get that. I just want to add something in regards to the training of nurses, which has been mentioned. We have been informed by the Nursing Council only as recently as last week that the moratorium that was put in place has been lifted only in regards to accredited facilities who can now apply for the right to apply for more nurses. What remains unknown at this stage is whether or not the moratorium has been lifted on application for new academies. So if, for example, we want to establish a nurse academy in a province which has never been represented before, such as the Western Cape, we are unsure as to what the position of the Nursing Council is in that regard. And I think that answers all the questions.
Members and ladies and gentlemen, I think we're meeting here for the first time, and I take it that this is not the first and the last meeting, but unfortunately it's very difficult to deal in the parliamentary work because sometimes it becomes so difficult. In fact, that's why I must apologize for not attending your hospital opening. I was going to come, but unfortunately things changed in Parliament, so I apologize sincerely for not coming. I wanted to come and see at that time. But what comes out very clearly here is that I don't think we understand what is going in the private healthcare sector as members of Parliament. But with frequent meetings, we might be able to understand exactly what is going on. And what worries more is that there's no proper communication with the Department of Health. I'm not sure where it's supposed to happen. It's supposed to happen at the level of the ministry, or it's supposed to happen at the level of the head of development, or there is a director that handles that. But it would be very interesting to know who to talk to about this, because we need this. Mainly, for now, we need it for 2010. We need to make sure that something is done for the 2010. Not to happen recent cases in Eastern Cape, in that province, but we need National Department to be handling this. It seems as if on our Health Act, or let me say the law, we need to relook at them and see whether they are actually serving the purpose that we want them to serve, including all the restrictions or all the things that we're doing. I think we need to go back to that one and see what is going on. But the bottom line is that we want a healthy nation, and we think that you are one of those people who can help us and make sure that we have got a healthy nation in South Africa. And that brings me to the point of we need to open up discussions, whether it's things that we are not going to agree with, that are not going to be done, but we need to listen to you and understand why you are saying this. So be prepared whenever you say something, you be prepared on justifying whatever that you want to say and bringing us facts as to why do you think there needs to be a university, medical faculty, a medical university, a private one. Why should we have it? So that we can discuss around that problem. But those are the things that we need to do. Hoping that we'll have time to meet you again. And when we meet you, the department should be here. And even the medical aid scheme should be here. We are going to be talking to them, the CMS, and probably we're going to be calling some of these big medical aid, like your Bonita, who has discovered it. We're going to be calling them, but we'll be asking them several things, but we need to be HASA and themselves to be here. These are not areas to fight, but it's areas to make sure that we've got a common focus and we're going the same direction, all of us. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. We can go and enjoy ourselves. You must take your wife out for the International Day for Nurses. So you must make sure that you take her. Thank you very much, members. We'll tell you what's going to happen.